3354 United States versus Scalzo, and it's still good morning. Well, good morning, Mr. Cohn.
Good morning, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, I'd first like to set the framework for the argument just quickly. Mr. Scalzo, the defendant, was employed as a loan officer at a Fox River State Bank, arranged for two loans to Mr. DiBartolo and Mr. Pitts, and diverted funds from those loans to his own use. Mr. Scalzo then left Fox River State Bank and became a loan officer at Consumers Cooperative Credit Union, where he arranged another loan for each individual, although the second DiBartolo loan was actually made in the name of Mr. DiBartolo's parents.
And so we know all that history, okay. So let's get to the
bottom. It's the defendant's
line.
Position.
Because the two lines at issue were charged in the indictment. They were specifically listed in the plea agreement as loans your client originated as part of the scheme. So now it seems to me it makes it really hard for you to argue they weren't part of the criminal conduct.
Yeah, but my position is that the government still needed to demonstrate that these two loans were fraudulent.
Well, he did show that he never met with the borrowers, right, before the issuance of the loans.
On the DiBartolo loan, second DiBartolo loan.
Right, and that the collateral that was used for the other loan was found to be insufficient in a prior.
It was found, and there were two issues I was going to raise.
Sounds pretty fraudulent to me.
No, well.
And the funds were used to pay off the other phony loans.
The two issues I was raising are, first of all, I think the government has to show that it was fraudulent. And the government has argued that just by virtue of the fact that it was included in the scheme was sufficient.
not every act in the scheme has to itself be fraudulent to be part of
it. I understand, but my position is that just by virtue of the fact that it was in the scheme didn't necessarily cause the harm. We'd still have to show that it was a fraudulent loan to demonstrate that it caused the harm to the credit unions. And the way I make that argument is if you would take a situation where the loan was a quality loan in the first instance, and there was good collateral and there was creditworthy borrowers, but the loan nonetheless went into default, even assuming Mr. Scalzo issued the loan to cover up what happened at Fox River State Bank, the harm that would be caused in the event of default in that situation to the credit union would not be because of the criminal conduct. It would be because the lender or the borrower's financial situation changed and they couldn't pay on the loan, or the market crashed for real estate and so the collateral wasn't as good as anticipated initially. I would also point to the plea agreement in this case. Before I get to that, the distinction there I'm making is under Donaby, where somebody is injured in a car crash as a result of a police chase following a robbery. The court ruled, of course, that that was part and parcel of the crime. In Marlett, the court gives the example of a woman who's raped, goes to the hospital catches on fire, and she's killed. In that case, but for the rape, she wouldn't have been in the hospital, but nonetheless, the rape didn't have the proper causal connection to the harm caused as a result of the fire.
I'd like to ask you something completely different, and it's this. The government contends that Mr. Scalzo didn't complain to the district court specifically about that roughly $14,000 discrepancy between the total of the loans and the total restitution ordered. Did Mr. Scalzo preserve that objection?
I'm not certain that we did, but the math certainly doesn't add up, which is why we raised it. Then nobody's explained where that $13,000 came from.
If he didn't specifically object, would you argue that he forfeited the issue or concede
well,
that he waived
error. If it's just a mathematical error, I think it could be preserved. There should be something in the record to show where it came from.
Well, do you know if there is such?
I don't know where that the difference came from. And in terms of the basic part of the government's argument that they were fraudulent loans is because the Fox River State Bank investigated the earlier loans and found some problems with them. There's nothing in the record that Mr. Scalzo was informed of whatever Fox River State Bank found. So nothing showing that he was aware that the collateral didn't have sufficient equity, for example, to cover the loan. And certainly with the case of the second DiBartolo loan, the younger DiBartolo may not have been creditworthy. Now we're dealing with his parents, who appeared to be more creditworthy.
Yeah, who he never met with.
Right, but he received an appraisal.
Real Bowers, and the appraisal was inflated from someone who had given him similar appraisals in the past.
And now they've lost their house.
And there's no showing, however, that...
He knew what he was doing.
There's no showing that Mr. DeBartolo, or that Mr. Scalzo was aware that the appraisal was inflated.
Well, he went back to his same guy who had given him similar appraisals in the past. So
he
expected this guy was going to be honest this time and give the honest appraisal.
Well, we don't know the whole history of that. There's just nothing in the record about what he knew about the nature of those appraisals.
And then the other loan, there was no credit information on file. There wasn't sufficient collateral.
That's correct. That was at Fox River State Bank. That wasn't at the credit union.
Well, I think what Judge Williams is trying to say is that he made these loans to borrowers he knew were unqualified, and the court found that he knew there was this insufficient collateral. So that would be enough to show that he caused the loss.
The court did make that finding, but I don't think the court had the facts to demonstrate that he was aware of their lack of qualification in the record.
Oh.
And I have nothing further.
Thank you. All right. Ms. Kraft, hi.
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Yes, at last. Good afternoon.
My name is Carol Kraft. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. I represent the government in this case. On behalf of the government, I'm asking the court to affirm the restitution order of the district court. It was supported by both the law and the facts of this case.
But can you help me with that $14,000? Because the court ordered $468,710 to Kuna, the insurance company, and $25,000 to CCCU, the amount that the lender had to pay as its deductible under that dishonest employee insurance policy. And that comes out to almost $14,000 more.
I understand that. And I probably should have raised this as an issue of either waiver or forfeiture in my response to the defendant's position. I don't think we know. Here's what usually happens in a case like this. Pursuant to the statute, the court orders the probation department to contact the victims and get victim loss information. The victims submit affidavits that support whatever claim it is that they're making. Those claims are set forth in the PSR. Unless there's an objection to the amount that's set forth in the PSR, the court generally accepts them. And I believe that there is specific case law on point that it says as long as the restitution amount seem reasonable and seem supported by the record, the court has the right to do that. Now, if that had been raised as an issue in this case below, the court would have had the opportunity to explore further why it is there was this $25,000 deductible on behalf of Kuna. There was another loan. There was another bad loan in this case originated by the defendant at CCCU in the name of a person named N.S. N.S. never filed any restitution claim on behalf of that, but that was something that Kuna also had on their books with respect to the dishonest employee claim. So I don't know if that's the basis for it. I think there's not enough information on this record, but I don't think that's an issue before the court today. I think the issue is whether or not the defendant can be held responsible for the losses for the, I use the initials because we always do that in district courts so as not to disclose the identity of innocent victims, but for the PD and CP loans. The court was right in ordering restitution for those because they were part of the fraud scheme to which the defendant pled guilty.
But
they're in the information, and they're discussed in the plea agreement. And in the plea agreement, there's also a provision that the defendant agrees to make restitution for the losses to Fox River State Bank and Community Cooperative Credit Union. So he knew that there was the potential for that to happen. He pled guilty to the scheme. Those loans were identified as part of the scheme, and he is wrong. The law is that under the MVRA, the Mandatory Victim Restitution Act, if a victim is harmed by the defendant's conduct in the course of a scheme, conspiracy, or pattern directly and proximately harmed, the defendant is responsible for those losses, even if the conduct that caused that specific loss is not criminal. And I believe the Rand case is the one that stands for that proposition. So, you know, in this case, I guess it mystifies me that we're even here, because we're not talking about relevant conduct, which would be a guideline analysis. We're talking about conduct that was specifically charged as part of a scheme to which he pled guilty.
Well, he contends that there were some payments made toward these two loans at issue.
I think that that's correct, and I think that that's reflected in the pre-sentence report. The representative of CUNA indicated that how much the loss was for each loan, and that is reduced amount from what those two original loans were.
So the court did account for those payments. Is that your argument?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So
I'll ask Mr. Cohn.
Okay. Well, in the final analysis, I think that it's very, very clear that the defendant is responsible for these losses under the requirements of the Mandatory Victim Restitution Act. These losses were losses that community cooperative credit unions sustained as the result of the scheme to which the defendant pled guilty under the law as it's set forth in the MVRA. He's responsible for those losses, and the facts of the case don't support his position that he should not be held responsible for them. I also want to actually, it was not the PD seniors who lost their house. It was his it was a different victim of this case. It was his cousin's parents whose house he had pledged as collateral. Excuse me?
Were those the NNs?
Yeah, yeah.
The NNs.
Yeah, the people who had to exhaust their life savings to buy their house back because he had pledged their house as collateral for a loan that his cousin didn't know that he had created in his name at CCCU in order to cover up the fact that he had created these other loans at Fox River State Bank that were going down the tubes. I think it's incredible to think that he didn't understand that what he was doing was criminal, and I ask the court to affirm the district court because the district court's restitution order was reasonable, it's supported by the facts and the law, and it was not an abuse of discretion. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cohn.
I would just like to, were you going to ask a question, ma'am? Or?
Oh. I'm just, you know.
The one thing I wanted to point out in terms of what Mr. Scalzo agreed to in the plea agreement, I would note that the paragraph that discusses the credit union loans in the plea agreement doesn't provide any facts indicating that that was fraudulent. And the paragraph in the plea agreement, paragraph 28, where Mr. Scalzo agrees to make restitution, it says, quote, restitution shall include any losses sustained by consumers' credit union as the result of fraud attributable to the defendant in the loans he originated while in their employ. So he was agreeing that if he committed fraud in those loans and originating those loans, he would pay restitution. So I still think the government had to demonstrate that, in fact, they were fraudulent.
Well, Mr. Cohn, thank you for taking this case on. The court thanks you for taking it on. You were court appointed. And we always thank the government. So thank you, everyone. The case is going to be taken under advisement. And I hope you have a good trip back to Wisconsin, both of you. And we will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30.